Sanctions orders are coming up more and more in my practice. I don't know if they're coming up more and more in yours, but I get a lot of sanctions orders, I think, because we can take them up on mandamus, so I get called a lot about them. And they're kind of trickier than you realize, in part because we have so many ways that we can get sanctions, right? It's Chapter 10 on the CPRC and Rule 13, and the discovery rules have their own sanctions provisions, and hey, courts of appeals probably have some, I mean, trial courts probably have some inherent ability to sanction. So because we have so many different kinds of authority, these rules start to, the drafting an order when you get sanctions, when you have a judge who's willing to give you sanctions, can actually be pretty difficult. The first thing I would tell you about drafting that order is state in the order on what authority the trial court's relying on. And the reason for that is because the standards are different depending on what he latched onto as to what why he was going to sanction this party. So if you have a Rule 13 sanction, that rule requires you to the trial court to state for good cause the particulars of which must be stated in the sanction order. So we're looking for particular reasons that he had good cause for Rule 13 sanctions. If you look at Chapter 10 of the CPRC, it says you have to, quote, describe the conduct that was in violation of the standard and quote, explain the basis for the sanction imposed. So the courts, these rules are anticipating a very specific, non-conclusory statement from the trial court about why the sanctions were warranted. It can't just state that standard. Again, it has to be case specific. And here's the real thing that I'm seeing in the case law is that a lot of times, of course, you're going to have a sanctions hearing before he enters his order, she enters her order. But courts of appeals are disregarding the trial court statements in oral, like at the hearing. They're looking, if the rules require you to put it in the order, the courts are looking for the statement in the order and not just applying it from the from what happened at the hearing. So keep that in mind. I think it's a good practice, even if your grounds for sanctions isn't a rule that requires specific findings. We saw in Transamerican the court really encouraging practitioners to include the grounds for the conduct that was warranted the sanctions. The court went out of its way in a footnote, which cited in my paper, to say this is the best practice. So I think even if you have a sanctions order that's being issued under the discovery rules or under the inherent authority where there's not a statutory or rule-based reason to include the reading, rationale in the order, I still think it's best practice and would encourage you to do it to give the appellate courts more confidence as they're reviewing your order. Okay, summary judgment orders. Oh my gosh, what? Really? Is there something we need to talk about in summary judgment? Don't you just say grant and deny? These have got to be the easiest ones to write. I wish that were true, y'all, but there have been two cases in the last two terms of the Texas Supreme Court that really bother me, and I need to make sure every trial lawyer knows about them because I think they can be a trap for you if you don't know about them. The first one was in 2017. The court said all rulings on summary judgment evidence, objections to summary judgment evidence, have to be in writing and entered into the record of the court. So if you're at a summary judgment hearing and your trial judge says, no, I'm overruling that or I'm sustaining that objection, and you have a record of it, which is what we usually think of when we think about any rulings, as long as we can document it, it should be fine. Nope. 2017, the court said it has to be in writing and entered into record of the court. And then last term, just this past term, the court actually resolved a split of authority that said the courts were split on whether we will imply a ruling based on how the trial court, imply a ruling on objections to summary judgment evidence based on how the trial court rules on the summary judgment. So if you lost the summary judgment, we'll presume you lost all your objections too. If you won the summary judgment, we'll presume you won all your objections too. There was a split of authority on that, and the Supreme Court came out last term and said, nope, we will not imply anything. So there's no implied ruling. It has to be written and entered in record. So when you're, if you have a lot of summary judgment objections, I would suggest creating a separate order that goes through everyone you have. But if there's not that many, I think, or they were all overruled or all sustained, it needs to be a recitation because it's actually an order. So it's not the preliminary part of your order. It's actually in the order. It is ordered. And you get that in writing as part of your summary judgment motion. Don't let this slip by. It can really be important what the trial court ruled on with your objections later, as if you're trying to hold on to or defeat on appeal a summary judgment.